You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 22nd January. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we're chatting with Chantal Marks. I want to touch on banks. They're kind of like lagging everybody else. What's happening there? Lee Kearns and why he prefers Xara over Tesla. And then Jonathan Hurwitz on the online shopping. We saw an absolute explosion in it last year. We get that. The point is, can that growth story continue? Yesterday's poll, we asked you what the MPC would do with rates. 72% of you were right and said unchanged. 23% expected a cut. It was close, 3-2, but we didn't get the cut. And 5% expected a raise. Yo, there's some meanies out there. MoneyWeb Now brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper-focus on acquiring stable, income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Investors go for gold. Worldwide inflows into gold ETFs, highest ever in 2020. I've got to say, though, has gold not served its purpose and maybe it's over? I mean, it's perfect commodity, perfect an instrument for a pandemic, but as we start vaccinating, maybe that run is done. Business Day, Chris Griffiths to chart Goldfield's future. So Chris Griffiths was CEO of Kumba, then he went to Anglo American, now he's at Goldfields. He is doing all the commodities. He's a great CEO, and he's a great one for Goldfield, but yep, he's doing them all. Morning markets, the US was green, the S&P up literally only 1 point, NASDAQ up 0.6, Asia is red, Sydney and Tokyo off 0.4, commodities red, gold 1861, Rand 1495, and top 40 opening call looking for a red open, about 0.5% down.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now is Chantal Marks. She is head research F&B Wealth and Investment. Chantal, listening to the governor yesterday, leaving repo rate unchanged, there was no surprise with that. But it got me pondering about the banks and the banking index generally, which we've seen the resi really recover from the lows of last year. It's still off its 2008 highs, but absolutely been storming. We've seen the industrial recover and pretty much, you know, back to new highs, looking fairly good. I appreciate driven to a fair degree by NASPAS and Process Richemont. Look at the banks. They're just not coming to the party. The market taking a deeply jaundiced view of them.
Yeah, let me first begin by apologizing for an extremely rowdy hadida that is right outside the window of my home office. But onto the banks, I think that the reason why you are seeing a bit of a lag is just concerns over the health of the SA consumer and how they are going to actually exit this very, very tough period in terms of employment and salaries and no bonuses last year. So I think that's more or less why you are seeing continued strain on financials. But I absolutely agree with you. I think that these guys might be due for a bit of a catch-up, especially relative to some of the other sectors and even some of the consumer sectors.
Mm. That's a fair point. I mean, we've seen some retail numbers coming out a little more down, but more positive, I think, than the market expected. And I got to say, some of those updates and results from the banks last year, most notably First Rand and Standard Bank, were more optimistic than I had anticipated. And they were, you know, keen to resume dividend payments, which I imagine they will probably, if the Prudential Authority allows, kick off in March again.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that what really was the difference for most of the banks relative to what their expectations were, let's call it in March or April, mm-hmm. was that the actual bad debt experience wasn't nearly as terrible as anticipated. Yep. And I know it was Standard Bank specifically that mentioned the payment holidays that they provided their clients with and how quickly clients were to pay back the money that they, or to get ahead on some of those payments again. So a lot of people, I think, had a very, very big problem making their payments and a big cash flow shock in April, May, June. But after that, I think it seems as if consumers became used to a new normal and that the actual payment experience in banks were a lot better than initially anticipated. And that is going to have a pretty profound impact on provision releases, in my view, once we get to earnings.
Yeah, and that sort of money they'd put aside for bad debt, those bad debts don't appear. That money then sort of comes back out of the kitty. One area perhaps, though, is future loans. If their impairments are perhaps going to improve from what we saw to mid-year last year, but maybe they're going to be lending less simply because maybe consumers want to borrow less because we're worried, and people are under pressure, which could perhaps mean the next couple of years are going to see sort of lower growth. And already banks were struggling to do sort of single low-digit HEPS growth.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we are still going to see a pretty constrained lending environment on both sides, demand and supply, particularly in consumer. I think we are going to continue to see strain in vehicle asset finance. It just seems as if South Africans are waking up to the fact that a car is not an asset, that you can drive it for longer than 2.5 years. But I do think that there is potential in corporate lending and especially in project finance. If we can get this infrastructure rollout going and the ball rolling there, you can start you could start seeing demand for kind of big project finance, as I mentioned. And if that actually starts filtering through into meaningful economic growth, which it's meant to do, then you could probably see a recovery in consumer lending over the next, let's call it 3 to 5 years. So there definitely is a bull case for the banks, but the risks of it materializing are still there.
Yeah, they're absolutely on your point on the car. If we work from home, we're not driving anywhere. Why do we even need a car? Chantal Marks, Head Research, FNB Wealth and Investment. Appreciate your early morning.
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth, but with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place?
Offshore,
while earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP.
Visit orbvest.com.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Trading with Lee Karen, he's a wealth manager at Anchor Capital. Lee, morning, appreciate your time. A great article that you published out, I think just yesterday, day before, Tesla versus Exxaro, and the decisions that as investors we make. And you put the argument that Tesla is a great company. What Elon Musk is astounding. The battery tech is brilliant. But on a price earnings of 1,150, it is priced for perfection and a whole lot more. Yet investors are loving and flying into it, even at what are eye-watering sort of dot-com level evaluations.
I don't know about dot-com level evaluations, Simon, but it's difficult to just sort of get an understanding of this new world and what isn't a good investment. So I think that the PE on Tesla has since then risen to 1600. and there just is a question mark as to your entry level now. I think it will still be a company that's around in 10 years' time, but what will your investment have looked like with today being your entry point? That was the thing to sort of put a question mark to.
Yeah, because, I mean, as an investor, and I always say to people, the price you pay for a stock is the one of the very few things, if not the only thing, we can actually control and manage. You then contrast Tesla to Exxaro. So we've really got New World, exciting, and the like, versus Exxaro, very much, mining coal, old tech, dirty, power, et cetera, et cetera. The point of the matter is that Exxaro is sitting on a massively low price earnings, a giant dividend yield, and Exxaro is going to survive. I mean, they're going to be around. They're not exciting. But from an investment perspective, you're getting solid cash flow, solid dividend, and easily a better investment from a valuation perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know what Exxaro is going to look like 10 years out. I think it'll still be a company that's around, which will certainly have the same reliance on coal that they do now. But they're certainly using that cash flow to try and reshape themselves to be more involved in the new energy space. So if you think about what NASDAQ looked like 20 years ago, could you ever have imagined what that looked like today? There's always that chance that management team can take that. And you're not getting given any credit for the cash flow that company's got available to reinvent themselves. And even if they don't, your margin for safety with that dividend is huge. So it's just, a question of why are you ignoring this because of the fad for new energy, which is obviously the right thing for the world. But you're giving this company no credit for what they currently do and what their ability might be in the future to recreate themselves to be part of that new world.
And this is very much a psychology of markets. You write in your note that when you came back into South Africa in 2001, we had had a massive run in the US. Our local market had underperformed, and no one wanted to touch SA equity. Yet the next decade was the SA equity was absolutely the right place to be, but the S&P gave a negative return. We're sitting there again. We almost got to say to investors, stop looking at the exciting stuff because that has already done its move. We need to go hunt around the laggers, the boring, because that's where we're going to find the gems. That's where we're going to find the next great investments for the next 5 or 10 years.
Potentially, yeah. And then, I think there's some of those exciting companies are absolutely worth looking at, but maybe the Chinese companies that are still only on the curve of the growth that the U.S. have already seen are where to look to. If you compare Alibaba's valuations as to an Amazon, as an example, there's a much better sort of safety point for your entry now. But I do think you need to sort of combine that with some of the companies that will still be around that do still produce food producers, industrial companies that are not that exciting that are getting completely forgotten in the pricing because, while it is obviously exciting to give clients huge returns, a big job of that is also preserving capital. And I'm worried for people that are getting caught up in the must be all in dollars, must be all in tech because it's the only place to be, that people could get wiped out if they get too caught up in this type that is around at the moment. And let's be honest, it's really exciting. And there's some amazing companies that are changing the world and will continue to change the world. But not all of them will. And if you get caught up in the ones that you thought were in that are do not innovate quick enough, I'm worried that what it might do to certain clients' portfolios, especially those in the later stages of life.
And the point you're making there in the last question is really a sense of it's not about either or, it's about balance. And that is always a sense of what investing is. As you said, you can have some exciting tech out of China and the like, but it's about balancing that portfolio, which is just prudent risk management.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've, as South Africans, this has been a dire last 10 years. So it's an easy thing to sell, that South Africa's dead and that overseas is alive. And that's where you have to be. And I just think it needs to be done with some prudence to say there's a lot that still needs to play out for that to be factually true. And if you've got clients that are most likely, especially someone sort of in their sort of mid to late 60s, the likelihood of them living there 20 years of retirement still in South Africa, regardless of what happens, is high. So the mismatch of trying to do what they need in local currency to live out that 20 years with all being from offshore currency and assets is a really difficult thing to do with surety. It's always just, it's a wonderful world that we live in. A market's a market only because there are a huge differing of opinions and things. But I do just feel there's so much emotion in it at the moment, so much emotion being South African, so much hype about this new world stuff, that is the time when potentially some pretty big errors and mistakes can get made. So
that's a great point.
The article was written while on holiday and getting a lot of time to reflect. We are at the end of a decade and just thinking, what is the obvious conversation that you will have with everyone? And is it right? And is it that obvious?
Yeah, it was a great article. I'll tweet it out. That was Lee Cohen. He's a wealth manager, Anchor Capital. Appreciate the time.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jonathan Hurwitz. He's CEO of Tojo. We spoke with Jonathan towards the end of last year on the whole rent instead of own. And I'm a big fan of rent instead of own. I think I want to rent more and own less. I went camping over the Christmas holidays. I don't own a 4x4. Crazy. They're expensive. I rent them as I need them. Jonathan, appreciate your time. The pandemic, the lockdown has certainly spurred an adoption of online shopping, transacting, leaped us forward. In a sense, I suppose, I mean, the question is for businesses out there, can we expect that online shopping trend to continue its upward move? Have customers adopted it, liked it, and likely to stay? What are your expectation there?
Good morning, Simon. Thanks for having me. Absolutely. I think this trend is going to continue, especially now with so much information and so little fact around COVID. Nobody really knows what's going on. I think that certainly the lockdown did accelerate all online business, and I think it has nowhere to go but up. Mm-hmm. We saw data that showed huge growth in specific sectors. Baby boomers, as an example, increased by 60% over last year. Wow. In e-commerce, which is incredible. These are people who are not comfortable behind computers, who like that bricks and mortar feel, but they had no choice. Now they've adopted it, and seeing how easy that is, I think that there's no question that there's a huge amount of growth still to come.
I suppose the challenge for the online retailers, and it's more than just retailers. It's watching comedy online suddenly via Zoom or whatever the case may be. It's that experience. They've got to keep that experience up for me so that it's an enjoyable, practical experience. As soon as if that breaks down, then we're going to start looking wonderfully back at our bricks and mortars. As long as they can maintain that.
I couldn't agree more. E-commerce and online sales is all about trust and reliability. You've seen a meteoric rise in the Checkers 60-60 business. Mm-hmm. It's about time and convenience. But as we know, consumers are complex beings. They want the lowest price and they want it yesterday, but they want to be sitting on their couch and scrolling through their phone looking at 100 different websites. So, we've got to find that balance. But I do think that it is all about customer experience. It is all about value and more importantly, trust. Big retailers who are moving into that space, they've got that element of trust with consumers. It's very difficult to launch a no-name brand, in inverted commas, online because people don't necessarily have that trust. But businesses now, you could run a very effective business out of your garage with outsourced distribution models, outsourced warehousing models, and all you need is an account in Shopify.
Yeah.
So it's an incredible time to be alive in business, and we run the risk of there's going to be margin compression all over the show, and we really run the risk of overtrading some of these things. But I think that consumers are, as I said, very much more discerning than they were. You could look at 10 shops online, make a call, and by 2-3 days, you've got delivery to your door. And that's on big ticket items and small ticket items. Just groceries you can have within an hour. I mean, people are so sensitive with regards to time at the moment that it makes a whole lot of sense.
And that big ticket is perhaps one of the big things. I mean, a friend of mine bought a fridge online, and it boggled my head. But in truth, why do I need to go to Macro or Dion Wired and stand in front of a fridge? I can buy it online. A quick last question. We spoke about the sort of rent space rather than owning last year. And as I said up front, I'm a huge fan of it. A pandemic which creates uncertainty, that must almost in a sense lead into that idea of renting rather than owning. And again, giving people an experience which is going to start to change habits and potentially quite fundamentally.
Absolutely. I think people are looking for alternatives, in particular on the rental side. It does come with an element of flexibility, mm-hmm. which I think people are looking for. No one wants to make commitments now. Mm-hmm. And I mean, our business, we're very fortunate. We've had record numbers over the last couple of months, starting from the Black Friday, and we've really seen a drive from a different segment of customers into our business. Not necessarily the LSM that people would consider to come to Telgio. You know, it's much more, a higher sort of LSM that are coming through because people are making these decisions. It's smarter decisions. Mm. You know, people are a lot more conscious about their budgets considering, the pandemic. So we're very fortunate and we're seeing it all over the place. You know, rental is growing and will continue to grow given its fundamentals.
Yeah, and over cost of life, oftentimes renting's better. You get the fancy tech. When it breaks, you just phone someone. I had a huge fan. We'll leave that there. Jonathan Hurwitz, CEO, Telgio. Appreciate your early morning, sir. This show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 29. It's a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA is an authorized financial services provider, license number 50483. Our poll for today, are you online shopping? Have you, rather, online shopping habits changed during lockdown? You'll find the question on the Twitter stream, MoneyWeb, on Twitter. Absolutely, to a degree, not really. Mine certainly did. I bought clothes and shoes last year online for the first time. Never thought I would do that. That's it for today. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available from 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie and Kodora, to you for listening, my guests for the early morning time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.